Military Mondays with David Katz.
Major David Katz, good morning. How is lockdown treating you? How are you managing without your stylist?
Good morning to you all. I must say I was empowered many, many years ago when I bought a set of clippers, a very good set actually, because I went through, I tried the cheap ones that didn't work, but I bought myself a good set.
Yeah, we're still on that clippers. Roundabout. We're still buying the cheaper nasties and then you throw them away.
No, the cheaper nasties don't work, I must tell you. So I invested in a great set. And I do my own hair. I cut my own hair. And if you want to know the details, I'll tell you all about it.
No, we definitely don't. No, we don't.
And
we don't.
One on the side.
I said we don't want to know those details. And that, yeah. I don't know. I was pretty clear.
I ignored you. I shouted at you. But, I mean, honestly, that's the way I've been.
No, but that's a really higher grade. David, if you're doing a one on the sides and two on the top, that's higher grade, because then there's blending and all sorts of things.
Yeah, my brother's been doing that as well, and I've been helping him, so.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I found works for me is a zero all round.
I haven't had the guts to try that. I'm so tempted to do that on lockdown. It's just give myself that zero and see how I look.
Yeah, but your luck, David, you'll do it and then lockdown will end the next day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're 100% right. So that's the risk. Then I wanted to chat to you quickly about smoking because I'm a retired professional smoker.
Ah.
I mean, I didn't play games and I smoked.
Right.
And I tell you, I've tried to smoke everything in my life, especially when I gave up. What I used to do is I used to go on these long hikes in the Drakensberg and things like that. And the day before that hike, I thought, right, I'm giving up smoking. From a 60-a-day habit to absolutely zero. And then I spent the whole hike, the next 2 weeks, looking for stumpies and smoking the different types of trees all over the place and whatever. So I understand.
So the South African smoking rooibos, what do you think about that?
Well, I tell you what, I've tried that many, many years ago. And when you're desperate, when you need that smoke, I tell you, I mean, what do they say? Necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah, but does it give you the same? I mean, it's got no nicotine in it.
No. No, it hasn't. But I mean, what's the alternative? You know, they say it's a more terrible habit than heroin. I mean, the withdrawal symptoms. And I know I went cold turkey when I gave up 20 years ago. And I tell you, it's more addictive than heroin. So I fully understand people running around the house looking for different things to smoke.
Yeah, Zanati, I'm telling you, increase your security because Zanati's got a lot of rooibos tea.
Yeah.
She's stocked up, dad and toilet paper. So now you better just make sure that your house is properly secured.
Yeah, definitely.
With South Africans running rampant smoking rooibos tea leaves.
Oh my goodness. Thank goodness I'm nowhere near Marvel.
Get into the business, cure some of it and start selling it.
Oh,
maybe
Zanati.
Actually, yeah, good business
Zanati,
idea.
A rooibos dealer.
Mm. Yes, exactly. You've got to stand on a corner with bags of rooibos tea. Gosh, what this has reduced us to, what this lockdown has made us become. All right, David, so we wanted to actually, and we wanted to do it last week, but we spoke about everything else, but we didn't land up speaking about this at all. When we started this segment, we often would talk about things in history and take a little segment of a time and use that just to educate ourselves further. So what we wanted to do today is just talk about occupied France during World War II, because it is a very, very interesting period, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. The fall of France was a huge cataclysmic event in world affairs. Nobody expected it. Especially after the First World War, where the French held out so bravely and kept the Germans at bay. So it was an absolute surprise to the whole world that France fell in 1940 so quickly and so completely. The collapse was so complete and quick that it took everybody by surprise. And it was a huge event in world history, and you can imagine how it rattled everybody around the world. I mean, it just resonated as one of the hugest disasters to happen in the early 20th century.
And the reason was as well is because they had, what was it, the Maginot Line, if I remember correctly, and they just didn't think that anyone would be able to get through.
Well, look, you make an interesting point. You know, disasters are usually made up of a sequence of events. It's a process, not an event. So when a disaster happens, we just see the event, but we don't see the process behind it. So there's a whole lot of reasons for the fall of France, and we can go right back to August of 1939, where the Germans made a pact with the Soviets, which was also not expected. So by making a pact with the Soviet Union, The Allies were wooing the Soviets before that and trying to get them as allies, and that would have put Germany on a two-front basis and put them at a huge disadvantage. And the Germans got in quicker than the Allies and made a pact with the Soviets, thus tying up that Eastern Front and not having to deploy soldiers there, so they could put everything onto the Western Front against the French. So that was the first part of the disaster, what was that pact. And then the second part of the disaster was when the Germans invaded Poland in September. The French and the British did absolutely nothing. It was called Sitzkrieg, the phony war, where for 9 months the British and the French sat behind their Maginot line and did nothing. When the Germans were very vulnerable fighting the Polish, they had very few troops on the Western Front, and they were quite exposed to an attack, but that attack never happened. Mm. The French and the British passed the initiative over to the Germans, totally. And then in May 1940, the Germans attacked France, and the collapse followed very quickly after that.
So would you say part of it was almost a lack of confidence in knowing that you're doing the right thing? Sometimes it's very, very difficult to take that first step, even though the facts are all so clearly in front of you. But nobody wanted to, certainly France didn't obviously want to be the aggressor or perceived as the aggressor.
I think the French were so war-weary after the First World War that, as you say, you mentioned the Maginot Line, and they built this Maginot Line as a deep, deep defensive system that would save lives and deter the Germans from attacking. What they didn't do is that they didn't extend the Maginot Line across the border of Belgium, for obvious reasons, because then the Belgians would have taken umbrage to the whole thing. So they left that side open, and they decided that should the Germans attack, the only route that the Germans could attack because of the Maginot Line was through Holland and Belgium, they would move their forces up into Belgium and take on a defensive called the Dahl Line, take on that defensive line well forward into Belgium. So they had a defensive attitude. They didn't want to grab the initiative, and I think that came out of the First World War, where the French lost a large proportion of their soldiers, and they were quite war-weary about that. So that was the plan, to rather go on the defensive, to advance into Belgium, go on the defensive, which they thought the defensive was less costly than going onto the defensive manpower-wise. And that's exactly what they did. And the Germans, in fact, lured them into Belgium. They attacked Holland first, lured the French and the British into Belgium, and then went through the Ardennes, which is supposedly in Luxembourg, which is supposedly an impassable section of the front line. And it wasn't impossible, because the Germans were able to cut through and cut off the British and the French forces in Belgium. And that led to the evacuations, the famous evacuations in Dunkirk.
Yeah, and then France capitulates, and obviously that is a turning point of the whole war, really. Because that was a very clear signal that there was never going to be anything but war in Europe, really.
Well, certainly it took everybody by surprise, including the Russians, because the Russians were hoping that the Germans would now be fully occupied on the Western Front, and the Russians were planning to do their own thing while the Germans were fully occupied there. The Russians were absolutely surprised that the whole process took 6 weeks and France was taken out of the picture. Another one very surprised was South Africa, of course, because the British totally relied on the French for their whole defensive system in Africa. The French had many, many colonies in Africa, and the British were allies with the French, and together they were going to mitigate against the Italians who were there and that type of thing. So once the French had been taken out the picture, and in Africa, a lot of the colonies went Vichy France. In fact, they became minor Axis allies. They joined up with the Germans. That took Britain's major ally out of the picture in Africa. And all of a sudden, South Africa became the primary ally of Britain in Africa. So the South African status was elevated on the fall of France. And immediately South Africa deployed troops to East Africa, and then deployed troops to North Africa, and became a very, very important ally of the British in 1941 and 1942.
That's interesting. So that actually was also a significant event for South Africa. I didn't realize that, the impact that it had locally.
No, absolutely. And we went ahead and formed part of the invasion force of Madagascar because we were worried now that Madagascar had become Vichy French. And we were worried that the Japanese now would come and take over the Madagascan island.
Yeah, no good ever comes out of Madagascar. I've always said that, haven't I, Zanati?
You have, especially recently with the
coronavirus medication. Yeah,
such a strange country. I'd love to visit it
one
day.
No, it's terrible. Don't ever go.
Not?
No, it's one of my worst countries to visit.
Have you ever been?
Yeah, many times. Although, to be fair, I've only been to Antananarivo. I haven't been to any of the pretty places. Antananarivo is just, in my experience, a horrible place.
Yeah, I can imagine. I've seen pictures about it. It's incredible. It doesn't look very, very inviting. But it fascinates me, the whole place. I mean, it's our next door neighbor. It's a few kilometers off the coast.
Actually, every time I went there, the same thing hit me, that it's really about, and I can't remember, maybe 3-hour flight from Johannesburg, but it feels like there is no connection between Madagascar and Africa. It doesn't belong as part culturally and attitude-wise, visually. It just doesn't feel part of the African continent. It's the strangest thing.
It's a massive island. I mean, now we're talking about Madagascar all of a sudden. I had an American friend in Cape Town who bred spiders, who made silk garments out of spider web. And he actually made the front page of the Time magazine for doing this. It was very, very innovative. And there's a lot of things that go behind. I mean, if Madagascar would have become known for anything, it would have been the spiders that they breed to make web, to make silk garments or whatever. I don't know.
Perfect sense to me that they would be known for the spiders.
I don't know how we got onto that, but anyway,
I have no idea. So David, we were talking about Major David Katz, Military Mondays. We were talking about the fall of France. Gimple says, what about the movie Madagascar? The line, just smile and wave, comes from that. That deserves credit. You're right. I am sorry, Gimple. Some good has come out of
Madagascar.
The name Madagascar, which of course is absolutely a movie which has got nothing to do with the island. But anyway, let's wrap up, David. So give us the sort of the overview of the significance of and how the world changed around the fall of France.
Well, certainly I think the world changed. I mean, we've spoken about this before, about the long duration of the war. When did the Second World War actually end? Did it end on the 8th of May or the 9th of May 1945? Or did it end with the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989? And the effects of the fall of France, I mean, could reverberate it and could be felt for decades after the Second World War supposedly ended in 1945. Certainly, it affected the French and the French society right up to today, where you have those who backed the Vichy government, and those who backed the Free French, Charles de Gaulle. I mean, they're pretty much at loggerheads. And I mean, if the French have buried their history because they're quite ashamed about that whole Vichy France period, and that has entered into the psyche of the French and exists up to this day. So it still has very, very significant effects. If we look at Europe today, I mean, we see that Germany is totally dominant over Europe. And one of the reasons for it is because France has played pretty much second fiddle in European events since its fall in 1940. It's never fully recovered. So I suppose those are the things that have come out of the Second World War that have perpetuated. So it still very much lives with us, those effects, although it's most probably buried and history has moved on. Some of that still lives with us today.
Really, really interesting. David, Major David Katz, thank you as always. Fascinating conversation. Really enjoyed that. It's also nice not to have to talk about Corona or COVID all the time. So that was a very nice break from that. 34519 or 061-895-101.